welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio here on April 3rd, 2022. Can you believe it? It's amazing how when you erase 2 years out of everyone's life, how quickly April shows up on the third year. We just ran into somebody this morning at church. It's like, oh, wow, we haven't seen you in, 2 years. Tons of people we haven't seen in 2 years. And lots of them moved away. I don't know if you guys are having that out there, but I keep calling people. They're like, oh, yeah, we don't live there anymore. We live in Texas or we live in Idaho. There's been a lot of escaping going on.
Yeah.
For some reason, a lot of people...
Exodus of California.
Yeah, people live in California. It's kind of weird. We're going to be the last ones. I feel like we're in Atlas Shrugged. we're going to be the ones where nothing works and the bureaucrats have overtaken us.
Yeah, we're going to be the ones in charge of turning the lights out when we leave.
Yeah, so Pat Bay Machinery is experiencing a little Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
Little difficulty getting machinery, little trouble having it put together properly.
Availability issues, hiring issues.
And then I like the part about how when they put them in the trucks, they stack them too tight, and then they bash them and break them.
Yeah, a lot of these companies now are hiring people that are not trained properly and don't have any experience. And so when you're in the shipping industry now, when your stuff shows up, you're lucky if it shows up in one piece.
You've waited all that time.
Yeah, if they finally make it and ship it and get it going your way, then you get it and it's all broken. So, yeah, there's a lot of challenges.
Uh-huh. And then we're talking about all this excessive cannabis use, and I'm like, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We're here to explain why your stuff can't get to where it's supposed to be, and when it does, it's broken. So tell us a little bit about Pat Bay Machinery, since I preempted your commercial moment there.
Well, they're located up on Twinview Boulevard, 3119 Twinview Boulevard, and they are the John Deere green dealer for the Northern California area. They have stores from, I think from Modesto all the way to the Oregon border and into Washington. So
all the way
big
to
company.
Canada.
Yeah, they are taking over to John Deere Green. So if you're looking to buy a John Deere tractor, they've got some great buys. Go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch their website is PapeMachinery.com.
And it's spelled P-A-P-E.
Yeah.
Just so we're not, being really tricky or anything.
There you go.
All right. Our guest today is Professor Albert Stewart Reese. I got the whole name this time because I didn't have a bunch of extra stuff on my screen. He's a family physician working in Brisbane, Australia, and he is doing amazing. He and some other people, actually. Maybe he can tell us about them. But they are doing a lot of research on cannabis, the long-term effects, the genotoxicity, the cancer, and the effects on children, and all these things. And this hour, I at least want to start out with the paper that he just released, and that is linked on our site. It's a three-parter, and it's regarding cancer in children. And so, Dr. Reese, maybe you could set that up. What were you guys looking at, the parameters? And because I'm sure everybody knows somebody who is either smoking pot or was around their kids or before they had kids. There's tons of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I see a lot of drug addicted patients, and some of those, their kids have had cancer, brain cancer, and leukemia, and stuff like that. So it's a real clinical thing that we actually see in our clinics. And of course, when I see a couple of cases like that, I straight away wonder, well, I'm looking through a little, it's like looking into a room through a keyhole, you can see what you can see, but you don't know if what you see is the whole picture or how does the rest of the picture, jive with what you're seeing in your little corner of the world. So that for that reason, we started looking at the patterns of population health. So we've done it in the US and we've done it in Europe now. We've got all the cancer data, by state across the U.S., and we've got for a lot of years, it was, I think it was 2003 to 2017, and we've got it in Europe. In Europe, we went 2010-2019, that was just 10 years, and we've also got the cannabis and drug use data for the U.S. and Europe, and we've also got ethnicity data for the U.S. from the Census Bureau. We've got the cannabinoid type that's exposed from the Drug Enforcement Agency reports of the concentration of the various cannabinoids, delta-9 THC, delta-8 THC, cannabidiol, cannabichromine, cannabigerol, cannabinol. In the U.S. seizures, and you multiply that out, and you can get an estimate at the state level, and also income, of course, from U.S. census. So we've got all the relevant social and demographic covariates, and we wanted to know, if you look at it, and in a multiple regression, we look at all the variables together, and you look at it in informal causal inference techniques to see whether the results stack up in the techniques of causal analysis. There are statistical techniques you can use to look at causation, which is obviously important. You want to know, is cannabis causing or is cannabis fulfilled, the quantitative causal criteria that have been set down by epidemiologists. We wanted to look in a space-time context because obviously California is different from New York, different from Texas, different from the Dakotas, you know. So we want to look in a space-time context, and we want to look at multiple regression and to look at and see if these things, if the cannabis signal stacked up. And when we did that, we found that for many cancers, indeed, the cannabis signal stacked up very strongly.
It's just, it's amazing because as it becomes more and more widely accepted, and I guess that's always has been my complaint about, you know, putting stores in our towns and that sort of thing, it just makes it all seem like it's okay. And that it's not harmful.
Well, I think, too, as they advertise it and these stores open up, it makes it more mainstream. And I think people naturally think, well, it's safe to smoke around the kids.
Yeah, they're not smoking it.
They're not smoking it.
So, they're not using it. I don't even have kids yet. They're not using it.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah, well, the thing is, of course, that they are. You're right. But, I mean, It doesn't make sense in a social sense, but it does make sense in a legal sense. I mean, because the bigger the pie, the more the lawyers are interested in litigating. So you're right. It's socially, it's a disaster, but from a legal sense, it sets up class actions very well.
Didn't think of that. Tell me this: when you looked at the U.S., I'm not familiar with the usage around the world, but when you looked at the U.S., did you separate out or focus in on the states where it was legal? I mean, like, you know, Colorado, who kind of went all in pretty early on. Did you notice anything jumping out at you from places like that?
Let me see. I don't believe we did an analysis by legal status in this data. We didn't do a direct analysis by legal status in our data, but we did show that there's a dose response effect. So the higher the dose levels that people are exposed to, the more they're used. And it's no secret that places like Colorado and Alaska, which use a lot, have higher rates. So we didn't link it directly by legal status, but indirectly these places tend to have higher cannabis use rates, so that implicates the legalization and decriminalization legal paradigms.
That makes sense. And so why the gap between the ages of like 6 and 13? Why was it not as high, do you think, during that time period? In kids' life,
the tumors that it's strongly related to, like acute lymphoid leukemia, is one of the commonest cancers of childhood.
Oh,
so you know, we published a paper showing that cannabis is driving U.S. pediatric cancer rates overall, and we also did a paper on acute lymphoid leukemia because that's the commonest cancer of childhood. And it's well known that cancer in kids is due to inheritable genotoxicity. So therefore, when you look at pediatric cancer, you're actually looking at transgenerational genotoxic effects, okay?
Yeah.
So ALL is the commonest cancer in early childhood, and it tends to occur less than the age of 5 years. And then it's related to other cancers as well, but they're rarer. And then it's also related to testicular cancer. Testicular cancer starts to rise in the later 10 years. So that's probably, that might be the reason for the biphasic relationship. We call that a biphasic or bimodal relationship, you know, less than 5 and greater than 14.
Do you find a certain percentage of pediatricians that either are or aren't aware of the dangers of pot?
Yeah, people in general are not aware of this stuff because it's got limited circulation, but or it's published in the peer-reviewed scientific literature. I think we've got about 15 or 16 papers on these themes now published, and we've got a lot of I think there are still 17 papers that we've got in the scientific press or in textbooks which are coming out or in the process of being released, and a lot of those have been accepted for publication in the next few months. So we've got a lot of stuff coming out. But having said that, I think there's a big educational exercise to undergo here. A lot of professional organizations are open to it. Like, we've had a lot of interest from the pain physicians here in this country on the subject, and they want me to teach them about it and present scientific forums and stuff. And so I think there's an educational process and that people have to go through. And I think knowledge and truth is powerful. And see, if you look at this whole picture overall, it's a very, very consistent picture. Okay, what the genotoxic damage we see in cells is paralleled by what we see in animals. And that's paralleled by the epidemiological studies in now 6 different places. So it is tremendous uniformity and consistency of the data, which becomes a very powerful argument overall. And there's also consistency between the birth defect data, the cancer data, and the aging data. And now that the aging data has been proved with the epigenetic clock, you know, it's all put to bed. So it really becomes an exercise in public education and getting the word out there. It's just a bit like what we're doing now. So, and I found that there's obviously people are worried about their kids and they're worried about their grandkids. Of course, you are. And as people get older, they become more concerned about passing the baton and the next generation and who's going to follow. So they naturally worry about that. And whilst you know, the top end of town, the commercial people are worried about the mega bucks and all that sort of thing, that's not everybody's primary concern. So you're right that laws are being passed now, but I think as these things become common, I mean, laws were passed in 1950. If you go back to the tobacco era, there were ads that, you know, that Camel was apparently the cigarette of choice smoked by your physician, and there are ads about that. So
I remember that.
You're right.
Seeing those ads.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. So there are laws that are passed, but as this stuff becomes, see, the whole thing about the tobacco and lung cancer link is that everybody knows, so the sort of game over, and then you just wait for legal machinery to catch up, which took, you know, 20 or 25 years, as you'd know that history. But so I think it's really an educational thing. So you're right, laws are passed, but laws are passed by men, and once everybody knows, in the next few years, these things are obviously going to, you know, like I've heard that they're terrible stories on the streets from San Francisco with homeless mentally ill patients, a lot of whom smoke cannabis, and similar stories from Colorado. So as these stories multiply across the nation, you know, and class actions start to come up, I mean, that's why we know about the tobacco lung cancer link, because of class action, the publicity associated with that. So the same process will happen, and hopefully it won't take quite as long this time. And, you know, the male will come home, the chickens will come home to roost, the male will come in, as it were, so I think we're on a thing. But the point is that laws are passed, as you say, in the favor of the industry right now. But once everyone knows, then it's just a matter of passing laws based on the fact that everyone knows. And once everybody knows, it's the thing I often think of is, you know, the story about the king with no clothes on, and little boy said, oh, the king has no clothes on. And all of a sudden the whisper campaign took the whole scam down. And so that's what I think, that's sort of how I sort of think of it in my mind.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the truly frightening part is that this is a multi-generational impact. So the scary part is by the time they figure it out, they've doomed their future generations unless somebody is, you know, secretly working on a cure at the moment. We're going to come right back. Our guest is Dr. Stuart Rees, and we are talking about cannabis. And just so we're not confusing anyone, we're talking about all forms, hemp, CBD, THC. So if you're not you know, technically in the category of being a pothead, but you slather your body with hemp, whatever it is, you know, lotion and all this stuff that they're making all this hemp stuff out of, you might want to rethink that. Probably not an awesome choice.
Well, in the big CBD market, I mean.
Well, they want you to give it to your dog.
Yeah, that I just saw the other day an ad to give it to your pets.
It's flashing on a sign right by the Mexican restaurant, by the way. So frustrating. So anyway, we hope that everybody out there feels like getting smart about this. You can find this program later this afternoon without all the free enterprise moments in it. We will take the free enterprise out, leave the program intact, and you can download it free. You can share it with friends. You can do whatever you like with it. And I attached the previous program with Dr. Reese, which was December 12th of last year, so just a few months ago, where he went into more detail on the chromosomal changes, too. So you can find that all at
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Bill was sleeping. I caught him. He was doing something else.
Pills, no smoking the pills to make me feel okay. You go down easy, baby. I could drink you by the case. You're my
Sorry about that. I cheated you out of the beginning of the song.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
I had a little fumble on the play.
Yeah, you have to replay.
I was all excited to play it.
Hey, it's time for our free ad for the weekend.
Yes.
Recently had my truck worked on down at Robinette's Automotive on Hartnell Avenue. They're located at 2251 Hartnell Avenue, number 7. And the guys down there were very helpful and fixed a problem that had been ongoing. Nobody else could figure it out. And they had it dialed in and first day I sent it down there. So hats off to Robinette Automotive. If you have any car issues, go down and see them. And they can get you fixed up.
Because they did a nice alignment for me, and then Bill had this ongoing thing. The air conditioner stops. Well, when you live in Reading and you're headed into summer and your air conditioner stops and you have to pull over, shut your truck off, and start it again in order to get the air conditioning going, that's really, really not all that helpful.
Not in Reading.
And the 6 times I had to do that going to Siskiyou County, I was annoyed. Couple of years ago. So the dealership went on a big fishing trip, and Bill paid $450 for an oil change ultimately and didn't fix the problem. But Robinette's, they fixed it. So we were like, ooh, we gotta give them some free advertising.
Absolutely. or give them a call. Their phone number is 221-6880. And I think they could they can
super
fix
nice
up.
And if you need tires, just go across the way to
USA.
USA Tires. You know, it had some A's in it. Yeah. USA Tires. They were super nice, too. Anyway, got to kind of plug the guys that are doing a good job, because there are a lot of folks out there that have closed. They were doing a good job but got caught in the crossfire. And there are a lot of people really struggling for business. And let's face it, nobody's got a whole bunch of extra money. So you might as well spend it with people who do a good job and care about you.
They're going to treat you right. So.
Exactly. All that. Okay. Back to the evils of cannabis and how it will ruin your life and that of your next 3 generations. That was kind of a hard segue. But no, it's true. I mean, all the things that we were told, well, all the things that we believed back in the 60s and all that is all totally off the table. None of those things
Well, back then was not the same marijuana they're selling today.
No.
The stuff today is so much more potent, so much more available. It's
kind of everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Hey, Dr. Reese, did you guys make in your findings, did you make any distinction between whether people were smoking the stuff or vaping it, or is there any differentiation there, or was it just use?
No, ma'am. It was just use. It was just recorded as use in the national survey. But it in all probability, it probably doesn't make much difference which way you take it, because it's a chemical action of the cannabinoids themselves, all of the cannabinoids
that
have been examined, as you say. And so the route by which you take it is of little significance. It's the fact that you take it, the amount that you take it, and the frequency, because the big sleeper factor here is the buildup inside the body, especially in the fatty tissues, especially in the ovary, in the testes, the reproductive organs. So they're the big factors. The route by which it's absorbed is of less importance.
Right. Yeah, and it's like I say, it's everywhere. You know, it's promoted. We've got the cannabis shops springing up everywhere. The smoke shops are springing up where you can buy all your paraphernalia and whatnot. And it's a big industry, and I really think people need to pay a lot closer attention to what's going on in your community with this stuff, because it's not good. It's not good.
Well, we still have boards of supervisors that are thinking, oh yeah, we should legalize it. That'll help. That'll get rid of all the crime. You know what? I will link the video. It's called Cartelville. They are making a sequel here in Northern California that'll be out, I'm guessing, late spring, early summer. Kind of gives you the other part of this. So maybe you're not using it, but it's in your local community. You can expect your crime rates to soar, and your the chemical toxicity. Dr. Reese, don't ever come and study here. It'll be terrifying. The chemicals that they use on the plants that's going down into the aquifers, that is being, you know, all the animals that are being exposed to it, all these things, this will be, that'll be the other part of the multi-generational exposure, will be the chemicals from where this stuff is grown.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that. I think you're right. People turn a blind eye because they don't live like that, so the stuff rises. And then it quickly becomes overwhelming. That's what I've heard from several places in Colorado. And people, as you say, just start moving out because the wheels are falling off. Mm-hmm. So it's like a tsunami comes in, and you don't want to know about it. And then it becomes overwhelming. So, and that's the point, is that all this tracks to the actual actions, the pharmacology of the cannabinoids. Everywhere, every community in the world, northern India and Morocco and parts of Egypt, where cannabis has really taken hold on a community, remember, the stuff's addictive. It can actually become like a currency, like an industry, like an industrial takeover in an area. Everywhere it goes, gets blighted with the same stuff. You know, people can't work. They get the mental health things. The genotoxic thing cuts in, that so they're aging their bodies, they're aging their brains, they're aging their minds. It all relates to the pharmacology of cannabis, and everywhere this goes and it takes root, you get the same thing, which is a natural expression of its pharmacology, and then the exponentiation of those effects at high dose exposure levels from a lot of people using it, and a lot of people using it in a very intense way each day, so that it builds up. So all of that's predictable once you understand the pharmacology and roll it out at the population health level, and that's what we've examined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's particularly bad with the younger generations. I mean, they're not even in the workforce yet, and they're being exposed to this, and they're actively smoking it and vaping it and doing all this stuff.
But look at our veteran community; they're being told that it helps PTSD.
Yeah,
I mean, this is actually being promoted, I should say, as a a healthy alternative, I guess, to medication. You know, you should smoke pot. What the heck?
That's right. That's the media. That's the propaganda. But the truth is the opposite, because it causes panic and anxiety. It actually causes pain, too. And it causes vomiting, as you know. So pain's a pretty common presentation of both cannabis addiction and cannabis withdrawal. And then they tell us they need the cannabis or the CBD to treat the pain, which has been induced by the cannabinoid. So it's a circular craziness. that's where we have to understand the pharmacology. And pretending that it's not there, it's not going to go away. The only thing, I think, you know, the only thing that will set us free is the truth. And as I said a moment ago, if the community is headed down the legalization path, which is inevitable, given the legislative changes which are occurring around the world driven by commercial interests, then in a sense our stuff's prophetic. And, as you say, the pendulum swung the legalization thing legislatively right now, but it can just as easily swing back once the tide comes in. You're back to tobacco 102.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult to put the genie back in the bottle with marijuana. I mean, with tobacco, you don't have a whole bunch of different states growing it illegally and selling it on the black market, whereas with marijuana, I mean, you can grow it pretty much anywhere, particularly indoors. You can grow it anywhere. And so I think it just... The proliferation rate on marijuana is going to be way higher than tobacco. But you're right. We have to get the word out to people so they understand the effects of the health effects of marijuana. So
it's
at the end of the day, the king's not wearing any clothes.
Right.
And if a small boy can take down the king, then if everybody knew, then the billionaires wouldn't get away with what they're getting away with.
Yeah, and I think a lot of our politicians are being paid by these big corporate marijuana growers and lobbyists. And I think once it's exposed how dangerous this is, you can expose the politicians that are receiving those funds. I think it'll dry up. I think it'll dry up pretty quick. But you have to
remember that a lot of these people, moreover, I mean, because it's easy to say people are being paid, but stupidity is actually more powerful than money, because a lot of people at multiple levels, whether it's city council or your county, state or federal, these people all grew up in the 60s and 70s. Thinking that marijuana was just something that, you know, kids did. It was no big thing. It didn't really hurt anybody long term. I don't think they really know. And then you get to, like, our federal Senate in this country, and as soon as you have 26 states that have legalized it, their senators will be on board for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, the idiotic Moore Act that was going to do all sorts of stupid stuff, there is no companion bill in the Senate, so it's likely not going anywhere, which is great. But the people that are doing it, I called a different county than the one we live in and asked them. I said, I heard you guys are looking at maybe doing some commercial, you know, legalization of commercial growing. Yeah, we're thinking about it. They really need the tax revenue. And they're thinking that the revenue they get from the commercial licensing will pay for any increase in law enforcement that's required. It's like, you have no idea what you're contemplating, but these folks are not in the age bracket that would use it, and they're not the kind of people who would use pot, so they don't know about it. They just flat don't know.
Yeah, well, I saw some of the reports from Colorado are horrific, the cannabis slums, and some of the things that have happened in Pueblo and some of those nice little towns in Colorado, horrific. So, and some of the documentaries which have been shot from Colorado. And I gather now that someone told me that in Colorado the lawmakers are looking at trying to put the genie back in the bottle and rein things in a little bit.
Good luck.
So, you know, I think those graphics are horrific. Everyone I've showed the photos of the slums in Colorado, the cannabis slums and the hippie slums in Colorado, are just horrified, because that's where the pharmacology will take you in time.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps pretty quick. I mean, if you add the slums in Colorado to the homeless, mentally ill in San Francisco, you know, all of a sudden, you know, that's freaky.
Yeah, it goes way beyond the third world, because you can't, the only thing you can do is try to rehabilitate some of these folks, but if they are, if they're so deep into that lifestyle, they don't even see that there's a problem, because that's, and the enabling that we're doing in this country, I don't know about your country, Dr. Reese, but here, there's a huge segment that thinks, well, we just need to make it easier for them. We need to make the whole drug use thing easier, because then, I don't know, is there any expectation that they'll stop doing it? Because I don't know how that works.
I don't know
how that works
either.
Make it easier, they'll stop doing it.
Well, they tried to do that in a town here, Chico. They set up free needles and free paraphernalia, and it turned into a huge disaster. You couldn't use the public parks anymore.
Waterways, everything.
Yeah,
just a disaster.
Big disaster. So they kind of tried to reel that back in.
And so we've got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Stuart Reese. And just in case you're curious, Joni Mitchell wrote a song about this a long time ago. I thought you might find it amusing. And you can find all of this good information and fun tunes to try to break up the terror and panic at We the People Radio.
.us.
Good job, Bill.
Thanks.
Didn't want to get snaked twice in a row.
Mindless told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, oh no. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined, when out of his sight, to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs or ands or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be. Now I heard.
It's all going to pot. I got $100 bill. You can keep your pills, friend, but it's all going to pot.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Willie. The generations astray. gotta blame somebody.
Yeah, there's a guy there that has been on the pot a little too long.
Yeah, and it's obviously made his life awesome.
Yeah.
So let's use him as a cautionary tale. So, Dr. Reese, what have we not talked about? What did we skip?
Well, the
I know there's so much.
What we haven't talked about is the next step, which is I agree with what we were talking about a moment ago. It was the a public education campaign.
Yes.
So we have to start thinking seriously about how we can get the word out and what the best way to do that might be. And I guess there are lots of ways. I mean, if you just take a blackboard and just start to think out loud, you know, you could, as you said, Cartelville's a movie. That's probably a great way to be, you know, go on the TV and the radio and all sorts of educational things. So I think we need to start brainstorming about a public education campaign, because we get the word out you know, the truth will set people free, and that's the only thing that will, because if we don't put the truth out there, then people are going to stay tangled up in lies. So, especially the lies of the propaganda machine in this case. So it becomes a question of how do you put legs on the truth? So we need to start brainstorming about, because as we said, a lot of this stuff is reversible. We know epigenetically it's reversible to an extent. The question becomes what would a public education campaign look like, and who would be the key stakeholders that we need to approach in media or in education or public education or maybe health departments, because public health departments put the word out. So I think that's where we need to start brainstorming to turn this thing around, because once everybody knows, then it's sort of over before it's over, if you know what I mean by that.
Yeah. How about the public health in some of these communities like Colorado? Have you got any statistics on the impact to the statistics as far as folks that are being admitted for psychological issues and withdrawals and that sort of thing?
The information that we see coming out of the Colorado hospitals is all what you'd expect, and it's all scary and it's all bad news. So it confirms what you said. Unfortunately, the public health industry is a little funny. It's quite liberal or quite leftist, if you know what I mean by that.
Oh, sure.
And large parts of it have been taken over by the pro cannabis interests. So I don't see the public health industry, well, not in general, although there are some notable exceptions. You know, we're working with some leading public health figures in the world. I think as people become aware of this, people are going to start, oh my gosh, they're going to start looking at the evidence. Because up until really we started publishing our work, the general cultural narrative, which applied in the general culture, but a lot in research as well, was cannabis was soft and harmless, and it's a bit sort of who cares sort of thing, turn a blind eye. But our stuff, what we're saying is, well, here's the evidence. Let's take a look at the evidence. Let's see how the numbers crunch out. And so people are actually looking at the cold hard evidence. And once you start to do that, and you just put this thing about the soft drug. See, we would say that it's not a soft drug. What we can't afford is soft thinking about cannabis. It's the soft thinking that's our problem, and not knowing. So once you put that aside, you start to get a trend. So there are public health. As I say, there are public. When I talk to people about this, people are thinking, oh my goodness, is it really that bad? And there is a chain of literature where they can go back, and we're referencing it now more and more in what we're writing. Where it helps people connect the dots. So there are public health groups, but they're exceptional. But I think a trend is starting. I think we're starting to see a professional trend. You know, I mentioned the interest we've had from pain physicians here, and some of the top epidemiology people in the world now are taking our stuff very seriously, and they're really wising up. As you say, that big paper just came out in three parts. So I think there's a little bit of a pushback starting, and we're hoping that a drip will become a trickle, will become a river, will become a flood, sort of a counter tsunami back the other way, of course, to protect the generations, as you say. So I think it really becomes, it's really a public health, a public education exercise. And so that's, and I think it's at all levels. We need to engage as many levels as possible, and people who are interested. And, you know, as I say, the model is the little boy whispering about the king's state of particular undress. So, That's really where I see it at.
Right. I'd really like to see some of these communities like Colorado, the ones that, and I think there's some up in Oregon that have kind of been on this for quite a while, have them publish some numbers on the increase in costs to public health, the increase in costs in our court systems, accidents related to pot. All those numbers, I think, put together far outweigh what a lot of these communities thought they were going to get in increased tax revenue. They may get some increased tax revenue, but the flip side is horrendous costs to all these other public health areas.
And that's kind of when the communication ends too. They stop talking about it when right. when the curve starts going the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it just quits being published. You know, is it?
Yeah, that's right. I'd like to see some independent people step up and do some of these studies and bring that to the public. And I think the tide would turn a little quicker.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Bill. Do you know about the Rocky Mountain High Drug Trafficking Area reports on Colorado?
Uh-huh.
They're very good, and they've come out for years, and they're chockers with all the kinds of statistics that you're talking about. I'm looking at, just Google Rocky Mountain High Drug Reports, and it'll take you right there, and there's all the reports and all the stuff, and they've got all the stuff, the numbers that you're talking about, the costs, the policing, the trafficking, and the stuff in the postal service, the hospital presentations, the overdose, the mental illness. They're fantastic reports from Colorado, and they've come out. Certainly over several years, and you can see the increase with time, which is what you'd expect.
Yeah, and I think that's what they need to take to some of these council meetings in these towns that are looking to legalize commercial growing and basically put the green stamp on marijuana use. They need to know what they're in for and what they can look forward to. So that would be some great information.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Rocky Mountain High Drug Report, they're fantastic. They're just a gold mine. All the stuff's right there. They're quite long reports, I think 30 or 50 pages long.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we can put that up on our website so people have access to
that. It's easy to link.
Yeah.
Well, tell me this. What made you start doing this in the first place? Like, what got you going on this?
Well, it was it's sort of the things I've talked about. Remember, I've seen these cancers in kids in my clinical population, and so I worried, oh my gosh, is this what's happening? Is it just my bent corner of the world? You know, sort of the looking through the keyhole type thing. And the other thing is what you were talking about earlier, that all this enabling that goes on, people lose the will. See, you're right about the change which is occurring. People lose the will. They think there's fine, there's no problem, and people want to give them cannabis to help manage their situation. It's a bit like giving whiskey to an alcoholic. I mean, we don't do that. But and it's just happening in Queensland where I work, because they've just started medical marijuana here. They're it's part of the legalization thing, the thin edge of the wedge. You know how it starts.
Mm-hmm.
And my patients are coming, and not only my patients coming in and saying, "Doctor, can you refer me to so I can get medical marijuana?" So when I get busted, I'm on parole. When I get busted with cannabis in my urine, they can't prosecute me. But now the patients are being sent here by the police themselves, because they don't want to do all the stuff, because they know it's all conflicted, and they've bought the soft, you know, drug, harmless sort of story. That's what they think's going on.
Wow. So, yeah, I hadn't heard about that.
No,
yeah, so
and here they've bought into it. Like in Washington, I remember when we spoke with Philip Drum, Dr. Drum, they thought, well, this is going to be a way for us to increase the law enforcement budget, and they needed it. They thought that would actually help, but instead they were just totally overwhelmed, and it worked against them.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, it's the same with the drug legalization thing. See, I don't know if you've worked with drug addicts, but it can be hard work, and it's all this deception that it's not that bad, and you kind of, they want you to buy into their lies all the time. And so we've always had the backup that, look, it's not lawful, you'll get yourself in legal complications, you know, this gets nasty. And when that's taken away, then the whole issue of rehabilitating drug addiction becomes so much harder. And the great question you say is why? Why can't I just waste my life and die 20 or 30 years young and have all these autistic kids and all these miscarriages and stuff? I mean, why not? What's your problem? So you get lost in the cannabis kind of a fog. So we wanted to know, and especially one of the things that stunned me was how silent the area, this whole epidemiological area is, because the reason we're publishing our research, I mean, I'm a busy doctor. You know, we see a lot of patients every day. You know, I don't need an extra job, but it's such a gap in the literature, and that's why we're looking at it, because I'm well aware of the stuff published in the last century about the genotoxic effects of cannabis on all sorts of cells, including eggs and sperm and chromosomes. And the question was, is this reflected in clinical genotoxicity the way that you'd expect in cancer, birth defects, and aging? And the answer now is overwhelmingly affirmative in those areas, so that the public health thing doesn't even begin to stack up. You don't even need to do the number crunching, because it's blindingly obvious if you're talking about not only destroying public physical and mental health in the present, but the next several generations, then there's, you know, there's no question.
You look at it and you think, how could this possibly be like sweeping the country? Tell me this just so we get some perspective. In your country, how is this being, do you think it's being promoted the same way as it is here? Is it all kind of the same regardless of, you know, what continent you're on?
Oh yeah, it's a global movement. So we're just a tad behind you, chaps. I mean, there are cannabis companies springing up in this country all the time. And Australia's richest woman is called Gina Reinhart, who's in Perth, in West Australia, is apparently bankrolled one of the companies. It's called Little Green Pharma, but it's not pharma as in pharmer. It's pharma. Right, so it's a stunt. And when I checked their landing page, their homepage, a month or two ago, there was nothing on there about, you know, singing the praise of cannabis, which is what I expected. It's just what it actually said was, we're going to make squillions of megabucks out of you guys.
Yep.
I mean, it didn't say you suckers, but that's what that's how I read it.
No, it's
you
true.
Know, it doesn't even talk about, you'd expect it to be eulogizing cannabis and saying all these wonderful and unproven. Nothing like that. It just says we're here to make cash. I couldn't believe it. It's so
crazy. Yeah, yeah.
They're not even pretending.
They don't even run the sales pitch. They just like a bush ranger. I don't know if you have bush rangers in Australia. In the US, we have bush rangers. It's just like, you know, stick them up, give us your cash.
Oh, a bush ranger. We always learned some fun Australian thing. Last time we learned about whippersnippers. This time we learned about bush rangers. Yeah, it is the same thing, because, and it's fascinating to me that, you know, supposedly the people that are growing this stuff legally, like, you know, I mean, $50 million, really? You have a few stores in a small town and you have a legal growing operation, you made $50 million? Huh. Because I don't see that.
Yeah, and that's
there is no retail establishment that turns that kind of cash.
No.
In a small town.
And then that just makes it a huge incentive for everyone else to jump in and try to do something dumb. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shoot. We've got to run away. Thank you, Dr. Reese. We really, really appreciate you popping on with us. And we will, I'm sure, talk more marijuana unpleasantness in the future. You're listening to We the People. You can find the archive at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.